Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast. I'm your host, Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
And we are back. Ton of activity. We have close to 9 tournaments to talk about this weekend. I got a chance to dabble with the new Inari last Friday against a couple of my usual opponents. And, of course, we've got some of your questions from the Facebook page to answer in our new segment of Question and Answer with Ray and Eric. So very excited about that, plus your usual ITC top 10. Lots of movement there and events starting next week. And I can tell you one big one looming next weekend for Memorial Day, Bay Area Open. Very excited about that. So, Ray, what have you been up to this week?
Building some random models and starting the new job.
Always fun to start the new job. Also, I saw one of the, you were working on, looks like the avatar when it comes from the Sisters of, no, what's it called?
Daughters of Cain.
Daughters of Cain, that's it.
Yep. Yeah, it's a nice little model, especially if you ever decide you want to go into Craft World, but don't like Finecast.
Yeah, no kidding. It's too bad because the Craft World one is a really cool model, but man, Finecast. Yeah.
And the fun part is the box that has the avatar is the only way you can get the 8 HQ choices for Daughters of Cain. So if I want to just have the avatar, I can pretty much find an AOS player that's playing Daughters of Cain and just say, hey, you want to buy these? If I sell them for, oh, I don't know, $15 each, it's probably cheaper than what they would be if they were sold by themselves. And see, that's $45. That would make that plastic avatar basically cost 30,
something like that,
which I could, might be cheaper than the actual avatar.
Might be. I think he's pretty expensive. I converted my into succubus for my Drukhari, so they actually have Sharnet and Impalers, so they look kind of cool. So, yep, as I mentioned, I got an opportunity to try out the new Inari post Codex, and a little different. I think the cautionary tale is, well, first of all, the hardest part is normally when you start a new army, you can pretty easily turn off the old army. You just kind of have to, you know, focus in. Like if you moved from, say, you know, like Eldar to Orcs, you know that, okay, this is the stratagems, this is the type of units these two armies have. Because you're still looking at Drukhari and Craft World and stuff, you're still used to having some of those tools available to you, and you keep forgetting that, oh yeah, the new Inari rules, you don't have some of those stratagems available to you. So luckily I made a couple of those conscious decisions ahead of time in list building, and one of the biggest ones is I added the Vizark to my army, and at first people were like, oh, that thing's overcosted, he's terrible, and he's a little overcosted. He's definitely nothing more than a fancy Autarch. But the key thing is he's got a unique ability, and basically he allows you to reroll ones for all Inari within 6 inches of him. Big deal. Doesn't every other HQ have that? No. If you read the wording carefully, so let's say you take an Archon or you take a Succubus, they can reroll ones for the appropriate Drukhari models next to them, even if they took the Inari keyword. Remember, they're reborn Drukhari. Same thing if you just took an Autarch, the reborn Craft World guys next to him. He's the only one. So when you have this confluence of, you know, traffic jam of Harlequin players and witches and Howling Banshees all targeting the same unit, the Vizark's with 6 inches of all three of them, he gives them the one to rerolls. Especially essential for Harlequins because, remember, you don't get their stratagems, which means you can't make one of them the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. So, therefore, there's no way to get the reroll ones to hit for Harlequins without Vizark. So I was like, it's not too bad. I built in a lot of redundancies into it, you know, because one of the things were the stratagem and the psychic power to reroll to wounds in close combat, and they don't have access to doom anymore. So I was like, all right. Our troop master gives all the Harlequins within 6 inches in close combat. That gives them the reroll the wound. the Incarn has it. So I was getting a lot of those redundancies, so I don't have to use that stratagem on another unit. So I actually had two units that were constantly rerolling. And I got a pretty good workout. It was one of my usual opponents, and he's playing a Karn list, and he's got, you know, the Bloodletter Bomb. He's got two units of three of the new Obliterators, and then of course he's got the Master of Summoning and the Dark Apostle nearby, so he's making them minus two to hit, rerolling ones, and I think he also had another ability where he could reroll one of their Obliterator guns, so if he didn't like the result, he could reroll one of them. And of course, one of them was marked Slaanesh, so he could shoot twice, and another was marked with Khorne, and it was near the crown, I forgot what it was called, but allows him every time he rolls a six to wound, it creates another shot. So, and he also had three Vindicators, which is kind of a cutesy choice. It seems to work for him. But, so it's just, for the most part, without the Vindicators, it's a typical chaos list. And so the first thing I thought of was, okay, I still did not bring enough shooting to generate enough Soul Burst in the beginning. I did get Soul Burst off a lot of turns, but not every turn. And a lot of my units had to weather a lot of fire to get close to him, even with that. And I can't imagine if I was playing Tau, what would happen to this army. But the cool thing is everybody kind of is like, ew, Soul Burst stinks. The ability to, because remember, it's any unit that dies gives you Soul Burst, whether it's yours or your opponent's. So even if he kills something on your turn, when it rolls over to close combat, I still get the swing first. So it became very tactical to make sure you lock up units in close combat, because then he was like, okay, close combat phase, all right, choose what you want to swing first with. And he looks like, what do you mean? And then it was my turn, then his turn. Okay, even though it was his turn, I was still pretty much interrupting for free, which still gave me, because I had about four or five combats going pretty much every turn, it saved me almost six to eight CP. And also, if you can swing first before he swings, it does a nice job of keeping your guys alive. So it was kind of neat. Trying to think what else. That nifty little stratagem with I killed this warlord. He had a demon prince that jumped forward and pretty much hacked my Incarn to bits, knocked him down. Actually, he killed him once. He spent the stratagem to resurrect him with one wound, and he kind of ran around the table with that for a while. But I was able to kill his demon prince. So for another CP, hey, we killed the leader. I'm soul bursted for the rest of the game. Oh, that was pretty cool. So it was deep. I'm definitely going to make a few tweaks here and there. But honestly, I made so many mistakes. I'm not in a big hurry to make changes to the list without playing a few more games, because there were some boneheaded moves on my part. Biggest thing I have struggled with is when to put the Incarn forward and positioning, and that whole every time something dies on the table, you can teleport them somewhere. I think I put them in harm's way more than I actually put them in a position to help my army. So I got to practice that a little bit.
So overall, what do you think of the changes?
They're big and different.
You got a few games in anyway.
Yeah, they're pretty different. I mean, if you're used to, you know, the whole castling they had before, where you had usually the big wad of Dark Reapers, and then Yvraine got them to shoot twice, so you don't have that. And so that was a bit different. I think the big mistake I made was this army is clearly an assault army, so I really need to focus on assault, and I only had a little bit of shooting, and I thought I had enough shooting, and I had two dramatic turns where the shooting just went completely south. And I was like, oh. And then you're kind of forced to charge, which means your opponent knows what you're going to do. Good news is the assault units with all the buffs and all the stratagems and all the upgrades are pretty good by themselves. So you don't need to. I felt like I almost overdid it with some of the assault units. So maybe going back and finding some more long-range shooting. So I don't think Dark Reapers are going away in an R units. They still serve a pretty important role. But on the other hand, this whole idea that Anari are going to resurrect some units that are horrible that you've never used before, and Eldar players are going to get, you know, start coming out with 30 striking scorpions. I don't see that happening. So you still have the issue of getting them to where they need. Striking scorpions are probably a bad example because they can deep strike, but you still have issues of transports getting from point A to point B. You still have to be able to do anti-tank, which wasn't easy. I thought about maybe, you know, doing the whole Wraith Guard thing, but honestly, you can only get them up to strength 7. So I was like, maybe strength, yes, I think strength 7 with the axes, with a couple buffs here and there. So I don't know. Right now, they're still shiny and new, so I'll play with them for a little while. It was a nice change because basically I've been playing the same Drakari list for, I don't know, since September. So it was kind of a nice break.
All right.
Yeah, I struggled against the tanks. I also had the Harlequin bikes with the Haywire guns, which, I don't know, call me crazy, but I think the internet might be exaggerating something. That one never happens before. You know, there's always truth on the internet. I had a squad of 6, and I see people all the time bragging how, you know, I take the Haywire cannon clown bikes, and they just decimate knights left and right. I didn't kill a single Vindicator. Granted, I knocked 2 of them down to like 1 wound, but it's that whole D6 shots, then roll the hit, roll the wound, and then get lucky with a bunch of mortal wounds. Now, I get it. With mortal wounds, it's awesome because you can rotate shields all you want. They're going to go right through. But it's that variables, you know, the bell curve is so wide. There's turns where I know in previous games when I've used them, they put out 15 mortal wounds, or had games like today where they were averaging 4 mortal wounds per volley.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was terrible. I was like, what the heck? I mean, I know they don't have Doom anymore, but this is terrible. So I actually realized they're going to get killed. I'm going to run out of command points doing Fade and Fire. So they actually charged one of the Obliterators, and then with Soul Burst, they were not bad. They held them up for 2 turns, which bought me some time to get the rest of my army in position. But I actually have taken them out on my list at this point. I don't get it. So,
all right.
Now, Skari reached out to me and suggested Hellions. Hellions are, if you're playing Drakari, use Reavers. If you're using Anari, you should use Hellions. And I'm looking at it. Now, I know traditionally Hellions were popular because they could actually get a triple strike with the old rules. You know, they kill one unit and then they soul burst and then they kill again and they use a Cult of Strife stratagem to swing a third time. And my concern is my experience with Hellions are they're the ultimate. They're just so glass cannon that they die to a stiff breeze. So I don't know what to do with them, but I might try it just for cause. I got the models. Might as well just try it.
Okay.
He is the top Drukhari player in the world right now. So. So yeah, definitely the whole always swing first, even when it happens in your opponent's turn, is a very unsettling feeling. I always thought that was to my opponent. I thought that was interesting and a great way to keep them alive. So, and there's a lot of neat powers, and of course your characters, as the screens start to die. Like if your opponent has enough sniper power, if he can't put down one of your characters, there's enough screens around where you can, as they start dying, you heal on a 4+. All of a sudden, your heroes come back up to full life, and that was kind of handy.
Yeah,
but it's kind of neat. Keep working at it. A couple ideas still cooking. So enough about my exploits. After the break, we will talk about the massive tournament we had this over the weekend, coming back right after the break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back after the break. As we mentioned, 9 GTs to go over. We'll get to them in one quick second. Just a quick shout out to the North China Open. That's right, folks. ITC events in China. Unfortunately, they did not make the 28 they needed for a GT, but it's a really cool thing to see 40K being played in a country we've never seen too much 40K in. So best of luck to you guys. Hope look forward to your next event. Meanwhile, we're going to go back to where the birthplace of 40K, Merry Old England. We'll start with the Caledonian Mayhem 2019. I remember Caledonian Uprising being like the big event. Now it's like they have like a Caledonian event of all different sizes and shapes. And it's like a McDonald's, you know, or kind of like X-Men. You know, there's X-Men, X-Factor, X-Force, New Mutants, all these other spin-off comic books. Anyway, no spin-offs here. Nothing but a who's who of the top British players, and goes your top five looks something like this. Mike Porter playing Chaos coming in fifth place. James McKenzie coming in fourth place with Gene Stealer Cult. Andrew Chu with Asuriani coming in third. In second place, Marcus Hinson with Imperium. And your winner last year snuck into the ITC top 10, wasn't able to hold on to it because he was unable to make it to LVO, wasn't able to pick up those points, is Malik Amin Rubio coming in first place with Imperium. It's one of two players, him and Marcus, were going both undefeated.
Demon, fear my wrath!
All right, next event, also staying in Merry Old England, keeping with the theme here tonight, is the Fun and Fluff Tournament. And top five looks something like this. Michael Costello with Farset Enclaves coming in fifth. Thomas Andrews with Imperial Knights coming in fourth. And third place, Joe Malem with Drukhari. Second place, Alex Woodcraft with Asuriani. And your winner is Rob Madeley with Necrons. That's right, folks. Necrons won a 6-round GT. It's craziness. I'm looking at the scores. Looks like they even use ITC missions. That's pretty amazing.
Cool. But they did just go straight battle points.
True. So either way, he still won 6 games, which... usually, in most tournaments, gets you pretty close to the top. And we haven't seen Necrons doing that for quite some time.
Brothers, the great enemy approaches.
For our next event, we're going back to stateside, Durham, North Carolina, for Warzone Atomic Empire. And your top five looks something like this. Austin Wingfield with Chaos comes in fifth. Tony Pierce with Chaos coming in fourth. Seth Oster with Chaos Orcs. I'm kidding. Just regular Orcs coming in third. Second place, Daniel Hester is with Imperium. Will that be enough to vault him into the ITC top 10? Talk about it later. And the winner of the event, interesting enough, with 5 wins, both Daniel Hester's and Seth Oster's went 4 wins, 1 tie, is Mark Hertel, with Imperium. Congratulations to everyone there.
To the last man in the last round!
One more event to get to before we take another quick break is Steel City Slaughter in, surprise, surprise, Steel City, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And the top five looks something like this. Samuel, I'm sorry if I mispronounced your last name, but you're a brave soul for playing Eldar Corsairs and still going in fifth place, going out, looks like 4-2. Fourth place, Kevin Wrights with Goffs. Third place, Ryan Christensen with Tau Empire. Second place, Tim Flattery, with Tau Empire. And first place, another veteran of the tops of the tables, TJ Lanigan with Chaos coming in first place. Interesting, we're seeing lots of clusters of armies in each tournament, but not the same ones. You know, we got 2 Tau in this tournament. We had a whole bunch of Chaos in the other tournament. Very interesting. By the way, for those of you who are ready to throw shame, the Corsair player I just mentioned, it is 100% Corsairs. He's got no HQ choices, but somehow he's got battalions up the wazoo, lots of Venoms, lots of Reavers. Actually, it's all Reavers and Venoms. That's crazy. Anyway, a couple more events to get to right after this break. We've got 5 more, including our only major of the weekend. Tune in right after this. Welcome Welcome back after the break. As I mentioned, we did have one major tournament this following weekend. And if you're going to do anything big, you might as well do it in Big Texas. The Alamo GT 2019, your top five looks something like this. In fifth place, Colin McDade with Imperium. Fourth place, Johnny Velasquez with Chaos. Third place, Andrew Ford with Imperium. Second place, Antonio Cedeno with Necrons. Okay, we got Necrons winning six, and he actually went undefeated. So, so far this weekend, Necrons, 11-0. Take note. But he was not the winner. Also getting five wins was Matthew Ali, playing, surprisingly, Thousand Suns. Ran into him at LVO. We were swapping ideas about Drakkar. I guess he's playing Thousand Suns these days. So he's completely changed his tactic and role, what armies he's playing. But a huge win there that certainly will shake up the ITC top 10 rankings when we get to those later in the show.
Take me to the front.
So leaving San Antonio, Texas, we're going to head up a little bit north to St. Paul, Minnesota for the Spring Conflagration 2019. This is a fun event and usually does a good job of shaking up the placings because it's a lot of the top players from the Midwest. But this one, interesting enough, had a couple guests fly in for this particular event. The top five looks something like this. Fifth place, Cody Bow with Sawtech. So he's the lone Necron player who made the top five by losing a game. Fourth place, Kyle Thompson with Cult Mechanicus. Third place, Nicholas Weiss with Imperial Knights. Second place, Taylor DeVries with Imperium. And yeah, he's from New Jersey. I'm not sure what he's doing in Minnesota, but he made the trip and he won. Number one spot with Gene Steeler Cult, Nick Nativati. The only player to go undefeated at the Spring Conflagration. So interesting, he actually posted his list recently, so if you want to take a look at that, sharing that with the group.
Demon, fear my wrath!
Keeping with the cold theme, we're going to fly all the way over to Calgary, Alberta for the Alberta Classic. Surprisingly enough, does not involve the Oilers and the Flames. Instead, involves these five players coming in fifth top five. Ryan Mandrick with Chaos. Fourth place, Adam Thompson with Imperium. Third place, Gordon Sundin with Latok. Second place, Adam Green with Imperium. And your winner, featuring the forces of the Hive Mind, none other than Darren Jacques. This, too, was a six-round tournament. I'm looking at the scoring system. Could be ITC? I'm not sure what they did there. I'll have to take a look at that.
They definitely went off the ITC idea of 1,000 points for a victory. So, if nothing else, they borrowed that.
Either way, good to see some variety out there.
Brothers, the great enemy approaches.
For our next event, heading back to the United States here, in this case, McKenzie Park, Illinois, for the Cataclysm Round, Crown. And your top five looks something like this, a virtual who's who of top players here. Fifth place, Fred Fortman with Deathwatch. Fourth place, Daniel Sansone with Eldari. Third place, Tony Grappano with Chaos. Second place, Adam Baramovich with Death Skulls. I didn't know Pajama Pants was back in the running here. It's pretty cool to see. But your winner is none other than Justin Curtis, teammate of Tommy Grappando's, in first place with Chaos. And this one definitely looked like they used some sort of battle point system. It looks a little different than your usual.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. Maybe not. I take that back.
I don't know. Usually when I look at something like this, I see, I don't know if maybe it's because I got too used to seeing the ITC way of doing it, but I'm used to seeing the strength of schedule higher numbers.
Yeah, you're right. It's kind of wild. Okay.
To the last man and the last round!
Heading out to Spokane, Washington for the Storm of Silence GT, another big event out there. And your top five looks something like this. JT McDowell with Drukhari coming in fifth place. Ben Cromwell with Imperium coming in fourth. Third place, Scott DeWinter Wilkie with Orcs. Second place, Kristen Broxton with Tau Empire. And your winner is none other than Zachary Nelson with Eldari. So he, too, was the only undefeated player at this particular event. It's just like, yeah, strength schedule. Let's see here. Yeah, that looks normal. I don't know. Sometimes, not sure sometimes how they score those sort of things. I know what it's supposed to look like, but it doesn't always come out that way.
Just a little weird. But anyway,
So as I said, a busy weekend in the land of 40K. So I said 9 GTs, wrapped them up for you there. Lots of changes. Interesting tweaks to certain lists, but definitely seeing that you need to get past some of those gatekeeper lists to get to the top. And I've seen some variety there. This coming weekend, as we'll get into quite a few events, but the interesting one, the big one for this coming weekend, Bay Area Open. So already some discussion on how this are going to be formed and kind of the future of the meta now things are kind of stabilized. And also not a whole lot of new releases on the horizon for 40K. So curious to see all that works out. So when we come back after the break, we'll get into those new events. We'll go over those ITC top 10 and answer one of our listener questions from our Facebook page right after this. Welcome back after the break. As promised, we would answer some of our listener questions. We've got a few here. So the first one comes up is the how is 3D printing changing the hobby at this particular point? Ray, what are your thoughts on 3D printing?
I'm not seeing a lot outside of some customization. I've seen some people use 3D printers to create weapons such as weapons that would make their knights look more like noise marines, you know, with sonic looking weapons. I've seen some custom shoulder pads for space marines. But that's about all I've seen.
That's interesting.
What have you seen?
I've seen two areas. In a broader sense of the hobby, one of the things that's kind of neat, if you were more on the role-playing side of things, kind of like if you had the app from, what was that old game? City of Heroes? Was that the superhero game? You kind of design your character. You kind of choose from, like, one of these type of heads, this type of hair, these type of muscles, this overall body shape. And then you can send it off, and then in 2 weeks you get a figure of your role-playing character. So one-offs like that are kind of cool. And it'd be kind of fun to, you know, do some individualized characters, or if you're into conversion, do like a head swap, you know, have your head on a Space Marine model. That'd be kind of cool. Unfortunately, what I am seeing most often is this 3D printing is replacing the bits phenomenon. Case in point, right before LVO, Haywire Blasters were in short demand. Short supply, high demand, excuse me, is what I'm trying to say. So a lot of these 3D printers, they're out making individual weapons. So you can, and because they're small and relatively cheap to ship, they're actually quite lucrative. So all of a sudden you're seeing a lot of these, like you see a lot on the blasters, or I mentioned Haywire, and some of the other storm bolters were another one where it's a hard to find bit in a particular kit. Maybe there's like you buy 5 models and only 3 of them get the gun. So these people are mass producing the weapons of the jour that are the latest hotness. I know one particular vendor who made shoulder pads got shut down by GW. It is a blatant copyright law. It's pretty obvious that they're breaking the law. So it's one of those, you're like, just a matter of time before they get caught. So if you got a good provider, jump on it while you can, I guess. But I still think we're far from the days of you stop buying models and you buy STF piles and printing at home. The technology has gotten a hell of a lot better in the last 5 years, but we ain't there yet.
Yeah, no. We've got at least another 5 years before it even gets close.
Yeah, one thing that is nice is being able to see our local hobby shop actually has a 3D printing station where you can rent time on the machine and you just, you know, bring your own files. And that thing is going constantly. I can't imagine what the wait list is at that point. And we had toyed around with this, buddy of mine. We're going to, you know, make, like most gamers, we're going to make our own game. And I had that same idea. We're going to 3D print everything. And it's okay if you're going to do like 1 or 2 models and then send it to a mold maker. But the idea of printing an army is ludicrous. And certainly a terrain feature is going to, I asked one guy, he printed this really cool wall section about the size of a what's the storage crates that they sell for GW now?
I know you're talking about, like Munitorum crates or things. Something like that.
So yeah, that's pretty cool. How long did it take you to print? It was like 19 hours. He's all proud. It's like 19 hours. Good Lord. Not even like leaving the house with the dishwasher running. I mean, just so I think it's yet to come. I think there's other innovations. I think the if you're looking for technological innovations down the road, I think the Dice app, I think as if they need to re-release that and there's a couple of new features I got that would make it groundbreaking, I think it would be awesome. Or maybe an interactive army roster, and more, not so much just creation, but you can actually start, keep track of wounds and stuff on your tablet. I think that would be, I could see that happening long before 3D printing takes hold. Anyway, speaking of predicting the future, our next question. So which codex is up next for a redo?
So why don't you go ahead and start off,
Eric? Well, the listener suggested that it be Demon simply because all the models came out, but we didn't get a whole lot of new rules. Matter of fact, we got kind of a sliver, especially when it comes to 40K. Age of Sigmar got an update for the new Slaanesh model. So it makes sense. There's all these models floating around. There are still rumors of a lot of Space Marine models yet to come out. So we'll probably see, I would see Demons would be ahead of the game when it comes to that. The tricky part is, you look at some of those, you're like, okay, who else is out there that needs major rebalancing? So I'm going to stick my neck out and just be different and say Grey Knights are next. Simply because they've got the models and they're just dormant. No one's playing them. And I think GW is kind of sick and tired of hearing all the moaning and groaning. So I think they're the ones that are probably going to get a code, because we've already done a points reduction and barely made a blip. And need a full design redo. And I think you need something more than what they did for the Inari.
All right. So, personally, I think we're going to see Demons. But I think what we're also going to see is Eldari. Now, the reason I say that is because I'm dead set on the idea that they're going to be posting up another campaign, one that will have something to do with the Slaanesh demons, maybe one or more of the Chaos Space Marine factions, and then the various Eldari up to and including, you know, Craft World, Drukhari, and Unari, and Harlequins. I don't know all of them, but I think what we'd see is updates to mainly a couple of models, honestly. Some of the ones that are fine cast and quite old. And, you know, maybe an updated codex. Not necessarily all of them, but maybe one. And the Space Marines is just a matter of time, because we've got all these new Primaris models. We can expect to see that sometime between now and the end of the year, guaranteed.
Yeah, that's just a matter of time. But I agree with you. I think it's going to be close to the end of the summer at the earliest. I don't anticipate seeing that before August.
Yeah, I remember hearing something about the end of the third quarter.
So, the thing that throws me off, I love to be like, yeah, the next campaign book, you know, it's going to be awesome. The fact that it wasn't teased at Warhammer Fest tells me that we're pretty far off. And that's kind of deflating at this point. I'm kind of wishing it was a little closer to being around the corner.
Well, no, they're right now, GW's playing things pretty close to the chest. I mean, we're not seeing or hearing really anything new. We've seen some stuff for the specialist games, but I mean, we're not even hearing any new rumors at this point. I mean, even the ones that you expect, you know, to dump truckloads of salt, we're not hearing those rumors either.
As a matter of fact, the rumors are heard this week. I didn't even bring them up during our news segment, except because they're the same rumors we talked about last week. It's Space Marine characters are going to become Primaris size. Oh, yeah, how's about that? Which ones? Oh, we don't know yet. Some will be new. Some will get do the Kalgar thing. Like, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, between that and the random moving of the White Dwarf, I know you said that you think it's just a change on their shipping dates, but I still think that means something big is coming. Not huge, but big. You know, like new two-player faction box kind of a thing. But I think we're gonna. I personally think that they're preparing for that, and I think they might think it might be big. You know, looking at AOS, the last two of the two-player starters sold out very quickly, like within a day or two of release.
That's such a good to hear.
And that's AOS. So, I mean, if they're seeing things like that, I think they're preparing for a big sale in a 40K line one.
I'm just glad to see that AOS has finally taken hold a little bit. So, glad to see that.
Yeah, no, it's pretty popular if you look at some areas, but it's not at quite as widespread right now as 40K is.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I know our local community, there's quite a few, because actually I've been talking, you know, with a couple of the tournament organizers for the AOS events around here. It's more of it than I thought. So I was like, okay, cool. So it's definitely growing. I don't know if it's as big as the pre-blowing up the Warhammer World days, but it's probably going to take some time to build that back up again. So our third question, we're not dodging you. We just need to do a little more research. This player was asking our thoughts on the Warzone Atlanta-style missions. I have not looked at them in probably since last season. When I remembered right, they're kind of old school, very tiered system. You have a primary objective, a secondary objective, and a tertiary, and at least one of them was a kill point type mission. So we'll do a little research and get back to you on that. So not really prepared to answer those questions at this point. But once I pull up one of their old mission packs, maybe the one from Atomic Empire, and see if I can get a copy of what those rules look like.
Take me to the front.
So now it's time to go over your ITC top 10. They look something like this here. In 10th place, hanging on by a thread, Ray Amumada with a Latox staying in the top 10 after several of the players from this past weekend were able to vault into the top 10, pushing his score back down. 9th place, John Lennon from Florida with Gene Steeler Colt hangs on to that 9th spot. 8th place, one of three Canadians in the top 10, Devin Swan with Tau Empire. 7th place, Colin McDade with Imperial Forces holds on to the 7th spot. 6th place, Richard Ziegler with Tau Empire. 5th place, Daniel Hesters with Imperium. 4th place, Andrew Ford with Imperium. And then 1, 2, 3, clean sweep for the Ruinous Powers. 3rd place, Matthew L. Lee with Thousand Suns. 2nd place, TJ Lanigan with Demons. And Jim Vessel with a wide variety of Chaos Space Marines. We're just going to call them Chaos Space Marines for today. But he still holds on to the number one slot and where he's been for the last 5 weeks. So that is your ITC top 10. Ray, what events do we have coming up next week?
All right. So the big thing, of course, is the Bay Area Open. But if you can't make it there or couldn't get a ticket, there's still plenty to choose from. We've got the GameX ITC 40K event at 5711 West Century Boulevard in Los Angeles, California. Siege the Tower 40K GT at Tower of Games in Virginia Beach, Virginia. The Midwest Conquest Friendly 2019 at Undercon 2019 in Kansas City, Missouri. There is the Midwest Conquest GT, which is at the same location. There's the Imps Emperor GT at Imps Gaming in Lincoln, England. The Emperor's Finest 2-Day 40K Tournament in Norwich, England. And the SN Conquest Zones at the Gibraltar Defense Police Social Club in Gibraltar. Wow.
That's kind of cool. So as I said, we're getting to the heart of the ITC season. So lots of changes to the ITC top 10. We'll keep you up to date on all those. Plus, we'll do our usual tournament coverage over the weekend. So check into our Facebook page as we try to give you updates round by round on how the top players are doing. Until then, leave us a review on iTunes or hit us up on Spotify. Hey, quick apology to those who follow us on YouTube. I was a little late getting last week's episode. I should get it up this week along with the episode we're recording now. So apologize for that. In the interim, though, I want to thank you for listening. My name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast.